time for Mac Geek Gab, and I've got our quick tip of the week. I like using ChatGPT for all kinds of things. I was using it for some troubleshooting the other day, and the logs of my Synology, of a Docker container in my Synology, were not easy. I couldn't just copy and paste them into ChatGPT to do my troubleshooting. So I thought, well, let me see what happens. So I took a screenshot, and using one of our quick tips, I just used the option key to put my screenshot on the clipboard. So a screenshot of the logs, and this is now just a PNG or a JPEG or however it's out there, pasted it in, just Command-V, right there into the ChatGPT text window. It uploaded the screenshot. I said, please evaluate these logs and tell me, you know, what whatever question I asked, I forget. And it parsed the text out of the image, understood exactly what the logs were, and then gave me some advice, which may or may not have been right or wrong. I can't remember. But the screenshots work in ChatGPT. More tips like this, plus your questions answered, and maybe even some cool stuff found today on Mac Geek Gab 1070 for Monday, December 30th, National Bacon Day, 2024. Greetings, folks, and welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in tips like that, or we bring in tips like that. You send in your questions and we answer them. You send in some cool stuff found, we bring in some cool stuff found. We string it all together into an agenda, loosely, but formulated such that we each have a fantastic shot at learning at least five new things every single time we get together. CES is next week, and I am ever so thankful for our five coverage sponsors, which in no particular order include Roborock, the Omni Group, CCC Backup, the Bombic folks, Eero, and Private Internet Access. There's links to all those in the show notes, and we'll be featuring them in different ways over the CES week while we are out there and filtering through the content for you. And also our giveaway this one. MacGeekGab.com/giveaway. It's marked two for a couple more days, and then we have a very special one coming for January. All that and more here in Durham, New Hampshire, for today at least. I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
And here also in New Hampshire, it's Pilot Pete, 1070, police code, improperly parked vehicle. Let's see if we can get this one moving along.
I like that. That's good. Improperly goodness. Parked vehicle.
Yeah,
I did that last night, and I plan on doing it again tonight at the gigs I'm playing. I love finding the wrong place to park. Well, it's not the wrong place. It's the right place for me. It's right up against the load-in door. So that's
right. You got a lot of stuff to carry. It's not like you've got a piccolo or a flute.
Yeah, exactly. So I always improperly park, and I'm happy about it. I did have an issue at Foxwoods once, and that was the moment when I realized, wait a minute, I'm not actually on U.S. soil. I might just want to go along with what the chief says.
Follow the rules.
Yes. Like, right. Over there is U.S. soil. This, they have their own way of doing things. I will follow them. Yes.
Right.
All right. Shall we keep on going with quick tips, guys, or is there more?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do one. The next one is one that I ran across my entire life. Like a caveman, when I had to turn something 90 degrees to the right in preview, I would go up there and I'd click three times. So it would turn 270 degrees to the left to get where I wanted. However, if you just hold down the option key, it changes the direction that it will turn. So you just hold down the option key and click once, and you can, So instead of turning it left,
I learned a thing.
Right.
Wow.
Works in photos too.
Yeah. Of course it does. Yeah. Of course it does. Okay.
So, but you were talking to him real quick. You were talking ChatGPT and putting that screenshot in there. When I was searching for that video that I'm going to show in a little bit, I put in the word Vegas because that's where I happened to shoot this video, and it like found a picture of a Ticket or some kind of text somewhere in there and said Vegas. So, yeah. I mean, it's searching all kinds of stuff.
But that was photos that did that, not ChatGPT,
yes,
right?
Yes, that was photos. Yeah. That was, so, yeah, that's the intelligence that's everywhere now.
Yeah. And it's true.
It's only getting
The Apple stuff is not everywhere.
No, we talked about that. That's right.
It's local.
Just last week.
Yeah. It's local. That's fair. Yeah, that's right.
So when Photos is searching, it's just searching your data. It's not. Yeah. It's not.
But it is pretty amazing that it can find
sharing
a tiny piece of text in a photo taken 28 years ago.
I mean, I've noticed that it finds stuff like tiny, tiny text like that I can't even read in the photo normally. In some cases, it's pretty amazing. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of very, very cool, so earlier in the pre-show, Dave let out an expletive. Not even a bad one. Just I was worried about him for a second because apparently he had closed a tab in his browser that he didn't want to close and didn't know where it was, and luckily got it back. But that made me think, hey, there must be a shortcut for most browsers nowadays have a reopen closed tab feature. Or I think in the case of Safari, we said it's reopen closed window. But if you do Command Shift T for tab, so instead of, you know, Command T would normally give you a new tab, I think, or open a tab, Command Shift T will reopen a recently closed tab. So it's your kind of tab. I closed a tab, I want to undo it. Tip.
Yeah, Command Z doesn't work. Command Shift T does.
All right, so Command T to open the tab. I was part of this conversation in pre-show, but the
Command T does a new gives you a new tab.
Yeah, no, I know that. So I'm learning the muscle memory. I would have thought Command Option T would be the one to like undo what I just did, but it's Command Shift T. Okay, all right, I'll learn that.
Shift T across the streams and then universe as we know it. So don't do that one.
Yeah, don't cross the streams. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get it. I'm just thinking through.
There is a bunch of shortcuts around tabs, I think, but
Yeah.
All right. Good. Thanks. See, I'm learning the things. I got two now. All right. We're barely 5 minutes into the show. Well, we're 7.5, but who's counting? Someone is. Your podcast app is counting. Is what it is.
So, ChatGPT is counting.
Yeah, it always is. It's true.
And there you go.
You got our next one, Pete?
Is that me?
Oh, it's me. I think the next one is me. I don't know why I didn't.
Good thing, because my mouse is acting up again. Well, I can't move anything anywhere.
Great. This one actually isn't me. It comes from listener Jeff. He says, I stumbled across a feature in Calculator. Not sure how long it's been there. Did you know that you can put the calculator into conversion mode and then make simple conversions like feet to meters or acres to hectares? Just tap the little calculator icon at the bottom right there in the iPhone. You tap the little calculator button that's in the lower left on your iPhone, and then you can put it into, you can slide it into convert mode and do all of these things. I had no idea. That's awesome. It's hiding in plain sight right there in front of us. Love it. Thank you, Jeff.
You can use also Spotlight Search to do conversions. I do that all the time.
Yes. Will that work on the iPhone too?
Spotlight, yeah. You get a swipe left from the home screen to get to Spotlight Search.
I just pulled down and got into Spotlight.
Oh, pull down. That's right.
And I put in 3FT and it says it's 0.91M. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you could say 2IN and it probably would do inches.
Yeah. It won't. Will it do, like, if I do 1 CAD for Canadian dollar, 0.69 US dollars? Yeah. As of this moment on December 20th, we're recording this one a little early, just in case something crazy happens with values.
I use it on my Mac all the time.
Yeah, same.
Command spacebar and then whatever I want to convert.
Bonus quick tips. Love it. Love it.
But the calculator thing is really cool. There is a lot of stuff in calculator.
There is. And bonus tip in calculator, if you pull up calculator on your iPhone and, you know, it looks like it looks, if you turn your iPhone sideways, there's more features in there. And there can be even more if you hit the little button. So, yep.
that allows it to do, what is it, scientific or something like that?
Yeah, it can go into scientific mode. I don't know why mine didn't go into full scientific mode.
Yeah, I was noticing that. When you turned yours sideways, it made you a liar.
Oh, no. This is different now. So that little calculator button at the bottom, the one where you can, you know, you tap the button and it sends you into convert mode, that is also where you can go into scientific mode. And now you can do scientific. This must be new as of iOS 18. Now you do scientific in both portrait or landscape. So scientific mode is not just in landscape anymore. So I went to share an old quick tip and learned a new one on the fly. So there it is. And at least on my phone, I can put it into math notes mode there too. It's that little calculator button at the bottom. So I could theoretically, can I do math notes? Oh, I have to create a new math note. I haven't created any on my phone. I see. Okay. So that's where you do it. That little calculator button in the lower left is kind of the magic with the 18 flavor of iOS. Amazing. We learn all kinds of things.
There you go.
It's what we do. Yeah. I feel like I've already hit my five.
What it won't do is when you like add up numbers in your bank account, it won't give you higher numbers. It won't convert it to higher numbers no matter how hard you try. You just have to save.
Pete, you just need the right password.
Mine seems convert it to lower numbers. Awful.
Your problem is you're logging into your bank with your password. You need to find the right password to log in to change those numbers.
Oh, there you go.
That's all I'm saying.
Adam, can I have your password?
That's right.
Adam, what's your mother's maiden name? Asking for a friend.
What's funny about another quick tip on that. What's funny about that is I absolutely, obviously for security reasons, hate those sites that ask you for the, you know, give these questions so we can tell you what your password is, because a lot of times the things they ask about are things that people might be able to find on the internet about you, right? So it's a terrible security practice and nobody should be using it. So my tip for everybody there is I just have one password, generate random stuff and just pick whatever question, and I just put that information in my one password. So it's like, for this one, what's the name of the street you grew up on? It'll just be some random thing is what I put in there. Never put the right answer. So even if you knew my mother's maiden name, wouldn't help you.
Yeah, I do total non sequiturs. Like, you know, what is the square root of pi? Pi's around. That's the answer. Or like my home network, it's named Sharpie because there was a Sharpie pen sitting on my desk when I was setting up my first Wi-Fi router. And to this day, Sharpie is my home network.
That's why Sharpie is your home network. I always wondered. Okay.
You know, Yamaha, you know, we had it for a while. We had it in Florida named after our dog, but I'm like, well, this is silly because now I've got to, you know, put all new passwords in and all that. So now in the two places, it's the same and the passwords are the same. So stuff just joins, but you know, but usually I'd go non sequitur, like Adam said.
I'm curious, what does everybody, what and why do you name your Wi-Fi network what you name it? Let us know. This is fascinating. Feedback, of course.
Yeah.
Feedback at MacGeekGab.com. Not feedback, of course.
You heard him. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com. Send it in. Send it in now. Pull over on the side of the road and send it in.
Feedback at MacGeekGab.com. I would name mine, you know, I name mine something like, "We'll steal your data."
Yeah. I named my Wi-Fi network Dave the Nerd because it was like, oh, you know, that's like the thing I used for my consulting business. That's, you know, Dave the Nerd. So I put that in there. I was like, oh, call it Dave the Nerd. Little did I know, of course, as with all of us, that this would be something that I will now carry with me until probably that of all the things I've done, the name of my Wi-Fi network will be my everlasting legacy. Because
there you go.
The family, once I'm gone, the family's not going to want to change all the devices to match some new network name, just like I don't want to change them. But like my son just named, he has a cat named Martin. And so when he moved into his apartment and had to start his own Wi-Fi network, he called it Martin's Mansion. And I said to him, I said, okay, here's the deal, though. That name will move with you to everywhere you ever go for the rest of your life. And I don't know how long you think you're going to live, but my presumption is that you will outlive that cat and many after him. So just be ready for that to just be there forever. Yeah, right. Martin II.
Martin II, Martin III.
Yeah.
Well, since
my favorite Martin.
He's had a cat named Martin since 2021. Have none of us in the house ever called him my favorite Martin?
Awesome. I don't know. Oh, well. Awesome. I've seen some good ones.
You will know. Like, you will know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely will tomorrow. Martin's coming to visit. My favorite Martin is coming to visit. So,
while we're on this topic, I guess I just realized that maybe I was psychic way back when I first got my first airport, because I thought I was being clever. And so my Wi-Fi network is called Air Max. So I thought I was being with M-A-X, but it sounds like Mac, and I had Max on my network, and I had an airport. So it's like Air Max, and it's been that way ever since.
Yep.
But that was way before Apple started using Max for anything. So,
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. These things. This is fascinating. I love doing this. This is great.
I've seen some holiday great ones. One of my favorites ever was FBI surveillance.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
I've seen that one. Yeah.
So. All right.
All right. Should we get back to quick tips?
We probably should.
Do you think I know that there's some betting happening out there. I'm not encouraging nor discouraging this. I'm just acknowledging that I'm certain it's happening. What's the over under on whether we actually finish with quick tips and get to anything else today? That's the question.
I'm under. Yeah. I'll take the under.
I'll take the under. Getting there.
All right. Well, the next one is a key. This one drives me nuts in messages. I'm typing a message and I mistype something, and or better yet, I'm trying to type something and autocorrect wants to fix it. I don't want it fixed. I want it to be what I typed. And I have to stop and take my trackpad and go to the little X and find it down there in the window and click on that to get it done. Hey, you know what? Just hit the escape key and it leaves you alone. It will now leave what you typed.
Oh, yep. You go. Yeah.
And if you move away from it already, if you get it beforehand, if you move away from it and it's auto-corrected, you can hit Command Z and it'll undo it as well. But if you're still on it, rather than have to go move the mouse to where you want it, just hit the escape key and you can keep typing. And if you've got a name that you frequently would get auto-corrected, you can then go into settings and tell it, let's see,
settings,
how do I
write it keyboard
down?
Is where you want to go.
Yeah. Want it to learn this, learn to misspelled word. So let's say you have a friend whose last name is Friend, only they spell it F-R-E-I-N-D, and you want that to happen. You can go in there and say, I want it to spell it this way.
Wait, and I want to talk about this, cause I was potentially misleading people to, keyboard and then what is it? Keyboard shortcuts? No, not keyboard shortcuts.
Yeah, I think it's keyboard shortcuts.
Text replacements.
A word is frequently.
Yeah,
text replacements. You can add it to the dictionary. Right click the misspelled word and choose learn spelling. That's what I found.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So type the word best or something like that. BSET or TSET for test.
Okay.
If you right click the word.
Yeah, I see it.
If you look
underlines.
Down there, you should see learn spelling.
Add to dictionary.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm doing this in, that was in Discord.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Where is
mine? Is not letting me do it in notes, but
yeah. I'm not seeing this learn.
I did it. It did it in pages, and I think it'll do it in messages as well.
Interesting. Select
the word.
Yeah, I'm not. I did type like BSET.
Okay, so you have to highlight the whole word and then right click on it, and then learn spelling is down below
it is.
All the suggestions.
I see it. You're right. There's learn spelling. Yeah.
I wonder where it goes, because I would have thought it goes like into some sort of personal dictionary inside the dictionary app, but I just opened the dictionary app and I'm not seeing that. But what I did just find Now I got to share this. I did just find the Apple, the dictionary has, so when you go into dictionary, the dictionary app, and open it up, it has Wikipedia, it has thesaurus, it has dictionary. So up at the top, there's these little tabs. It has all. One of the dictionaries is Apple. And this comes up for me all the time when I'm like, what? Apple calls that feature or that thing like something. So like I just went in there and I typed the letter E and up pops things like expose. Expose, a Mac OS feature that lets you temporarily move windows out of the way or off the screen entirely. In 2011, Expose became part of Mission Control. Also, see Mission Control.
There you go. Yep. Yep.
But Taptic Engine is in here. Like all these things.
All the things from the Appleverse.
Yeah.
So all if you're right. Wondering what that Apple thing is, you can use the dictionary app to find it.
The dictionary app. That's fascinating. All right. Go figure. I guess it makes sense.
I got one other question.
Yeah.
What's another word for thesaurus?
Andy has our next quick tip. He
run, Dave, run.
Says, talking about wireless music, unlike you HomePod and or Sonos aficionados, I use either a newer receiver with built-in AirPlay or an older receiver with either like an old Apple TV, which of course is an AirPlay destination, a cheap Roku or Raspberry Pi with AirPlay software involved, something like that. With my Yamaha receiver and my buddy's Denon receiver, both of them have AirPlay and Bluetooth built in. We have had situations where we lose connectivity. We finally figured out that totally disconnecting power usually fixes the issue. So a full reboot, as both of these types of receivers are at least semi-on or semi-off when turned off, software gremlins still apparently reside until all power is cut off from the device. I'm not sure this solves 100% of our issues, but so far it has. And I forgot to mention that my buddy has an Android phone, so this was some sort of wireless networking glitch in general with receivers, not AirPlay only. So the lesson from Andy is if you are having problems with especially a receiver or, you know, some piece of stereo equipment that is an AirPlay destination, the power button on it does not actually turn it off. It just goes into kind of a low power sleep mode so that it can power up quickly, but it doesn't cause a full reboot like I always call it, causing a resistance issue or, you know, a high impedance air gap by removing the power plug from the wall. So, I have had this issue, and I had it with my Apple TV as an AirPlay destination at times too, but certainly with receivers and those other sort of devices that you can get that are AirPlay receivers. Go into your router and set a DHCP reservation for, in this case, your receiver. Having it not change IP addresses often is the solution. And of course, you know, repowering it causes it to go and refetch from the DHCP server. But if you give it a reservation and just let it be the same IP all the time, that will likely solve your issue. It is something that I've seen solve this issue in the past. So yeah, that's my cool advice on that. Yeah. Yeah. I realize it wasn't sent in as a question, but as we were talking about it, yeah. It is with great reservation that I say, Pete, what do you have next?
Who, me? What, am I up? Just kidding. So, let's see. I think it's Andrew. Yep, Andrew writes in, and he said, this is prompted by Pilot Pete's comment last week, well, 2 weeks ago now, that he reinstalled iOS on a device by plugging an iPhone into a Mac. On iOS, you can delete Apple apps, for example, podcasts and Safari, and reinstall them later through the App Store. However, on Mac OS, you can't reinstall deleted apps through the Mac App Store. You have to do a complete reinstall. Here's my problem. Ever since I went from Mac OS 14 to 15, my podcast app just crashes not long after launch, whether I play something or not. I thought, okay, I'll wait until 15.1 and that will fix it. But if Dave would say, no bueno, 15.2 arrives. No bueno. No expletive bueno. Fish shake at Apple. There are multiple recommendations in Google Foo on this. However, before spending hours waiting through suggestions, I thought I would quickly nuke the preferences or plist or whatever master data is stored in the library or elsewhere. However, I get super nervous poking around in the library for fear of doing something wrong. Can someone please tell me the files and or folders to nuke and reset the Apple Podcast Mac app or user data? Thank you, Andrew. And so I thought, you know what? I don't use podcasts on my Mac very much, so I'll play with that. And I went in there and I did some research and I thought, okay, I'll delete the com.apple.podcast.plist file and the com.apple.podcast file, and that should work. Since I don't, like I said, since I don't use it much, I'll do it a test run and see how it works out. And it wouldn't delete. With, you know, all kinds of, it would probably, if I went in and did the terminal and sudo overwrote everything and all that, I could probably get rid of it. But in aviation, we call that a Kluebird strike. Apple does not want you getting rid of those files. But he actually wound up with a follow up. He got the answer reinstalling the OS. And so he reinstalled from recovery mode, and that was not hours and hours. It just reinstalled the OS and now it is working. So that's option one. And then, or the second quick tip out of that is do what he did, which is go to our MacGeekGab.com/Discord, go to the help desk channel, put that in there, and someone like Ben, who is regularly in there and giving good answers, will likely answer you. And we've got an amazing community in there on the help desk. But that's where he got the answer. So amazing. I wanted to pass that along. Go to our help desk, probably better than Apple sometimes, to get the answer you want quickly, the right answer.
Cool.
Unless I answer it, in which case, go to Apple
support. Also go to the help desk. too funny.
So, yeah, I did. What do you think, Dave? I mean, when it won't go to the trash can, you know, you're in that library, which is a hidden folder anyway, and go into a com.apple.podcast.plist, and you try to delete it, and it goes, it's trying to tell you something.
Well, it's probably an active file or something. I mean, there's a few ways of deleting things. One is to go to the first thing I would do is go to the terminal and do sudo sudo space, and all of these terminal commands like are potentially like terribly destructive that I'm about to say here. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, venture forth with great caution, but
and lots of backups on standby.
Yeah. Sudo space RM space full path to the file. Be very careful not to hit return until you're certain. But that would do it, potentially. And if that doesn't do it, then, rebooting into single user mode, can we even still do that Apple Silicon? As I'm saying it, I have not done that, but single user mode, one issue with deleting files sometimes is that the system is actively has that file open, and so it's not going to let you muck with it. However, single user mode ain't nothing open but a shell, so you know usually those kinds of things go away. But can we do single user mode on Apple Silicon?
Maybe not.
I don't know.
I don't remember. I haven't done it in a long time. While you're looking for that, so. Would it literally not let you put those files in the trash?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You said, yeah, I forget the exact came up, but it was a user permissions thing, even though I'm the admin on I was in an administrative account on my machine. It was not happy.
So there's no more single user mode. I'm looking at Apple's knowledge base article on it. Okay. And And okay. It says, first of all, the command S to start up in single user mode is only a key combination for Intel based Macs. There's nothing for Apple Silicon. And then it also says command S start up in single user mode disabled in macOS Mojave or later.
Mm.
So no wonder I haven't used it in a long time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So safe mode would be closer because at least you're not running all the system services and you just open a terminal. Or couldn't you launch into on Apple Silicon, you can launch into disk, the whole thing where you get disk utility up. You can run a terminal from there. You would have to mount the drive as read write. And then you could do it. So I think it's still doable. It's just a different path. Yeah.
Did I see something in there about target disk mode? You could get to it that way too if you mounted it in a connected to another machine.
That's true. Does target disk mode work with Apple Silicon?
What you just had up, I saw the words target disk mode.
Well, yeah, but that's on the Intel. That's on the Intel list.
Oh yeah. Right. Okay. So yeah. It may not work in
that. But it might. Like, there's all. Obviously, I'm not going to restart this machine into the right for all those reasons, because then I couldn't keep doing the show. But
yeah,
there is that screen. So there are options there. I forget if target. I think target disk mode is. I think it's still there. Yeah, man. I got it. You know what? I will take some time over the holidays and peruse through that.
You mean the holidays that just passed?
Well, this is true. Yeah. We're still in the midst of the holiday. Anything before we go to CES is considered holidays for me. In that I just keep still working no matter what. But like this idea of I want to go into I don't have a working memory of what's available in the menu options that exist when you hold down the power button on your to start up your M1 or Apple Silicon Mac on M anything Mac. And that is valuable stuff to know, not just for doing this show and answering questions on the fly, but also for ourselves when we have these problems on our Macs, knowing that, oh, I can go over there into this special mode and do this thing, that's valuable. And so I want to spend time doing that, and so I will. So just to familiarize myself.
I think I actually know what this might be.
Okay.
I'm going to guess that what you ran into, Pete, was System Integrity Protection, SIP,
mm-hmm.
which is a new thing in macOS. It restricts certain system files, directories, processes from being modified, deleted, or replaced, even if you have admin privileges. So it modifies the root, the actions, or it limits, rather, I guess that's just the correct way to say it. It limits actions on the root user account for certain kinds of actions to protect, like the operating system and critical files and things that apps install or really the OS has installed. So it is literally designed for two things. One, to prevent people from like getting themselves in trouble, deleting system files, but also more importantly, if you got malware or some sort of thing on your system, it can't go in and trash things, even if it has root privileges. You can turn this off. And this is part of the reason why I'm bringing this up, because to Dave's point earlier, it's good to know about these things. You'll see tips sometimes online where you're trying to do something and someone will tell you to turn this off, to do an action. Make sure you know what you're doing when you're doing this, because it, again, like Dave said, it could be highly dangerous if you're not careful. Number two, if you do turn it off for some reason, make sure you turn it back on. You want this on your system.
Right. So, I didn't remember it was System Integrity Protection, but that's what I was saying when I said, this is Kluber's, right? Apple's got your back, so to speak, on this. And I was tempted, like I say, to go into terminal and use the sudo rm and drag that file into terminal, which is
it might not have worked.
Path.
No, it wouldn't have.
It wouldn't have because of System Integrity Protection. But I was just thinking, I was tempted to putts with that. And then I went, you know, it's kind of late at night and I don't want to create more problems for myself than not. And Marcy, he had followed up with the reinstall through the recovery mode and that worked. But it's right there in the page you had up earlier, Dave. One of the things, it says all these files you can't delete and or mess with. And it one of them was files related to the pre-installed apps that come with the operating system.
Yep.
So
to answer a question that I had earlier and stumbled through in this page about disabling system and re-enabling system integrity protection that we will link to in the show notes at MacGeekGab.com. It talks about restart your computer in recovery mode. So that's the hold down the power button until you get into recovery mode. And then at least on a Apple Silicon Mac, and then launch terminal from the utilities menu. So there's your single user mode ish right there. So yes, it is right there. And then there's commands to run to disable and re-enable system integrity protection and all that stuff. So yeah, sweet.
So and then we got this comment from Danny, which is gutsy move, man. Gutsiest move I've ever seen.
The comment is SIP is one of the first things I disable. There are scenarios where that is necessary to disable and leave disabled. I don't think it's true of my current setup, but there was an audio device and its drivers required me not to just disable SIP to install them, but to just never do that again. And I think that's all been remedied. I can have SIP on and all that now. But yeah, there was a time when because of the audio hardware that I was using, SIP was not part of my workflow up here. But it's all fine. Speaking of things that have changed since we have, you know, now that we are in this deep into this migration from Intel to Apple Silicon is from listener Bob. He says, you were talking about using Grand Perspective as a replacement for Space Lens in Clean My Mac back in episode 1068. He says, I tried Grand Perspective, but it didn't work for me. But something new in the latest version of Clean My Mac did help me restore some free space on my volume. When it did my last scan, it highlighted a number of my apps that had code for both Intel and Apple Silicon. It said that since I am running Apple Silicon, I don't need all of the Intel code, and it allowed me the option to remove all of that Intel code from the apps on my Mac. I was afraid that I might get caught, but I do trust MacPaw software, so I gave it a go. Bob says it saved me almost a gig of space, and everything seems to be working just fine. When we moved from 68K RISC processors to Intel processors, we called those, and the same thing happened, right? They apps were compiled with both 68K and Intel code, and we called them fat binaries. So I know now we call them universal binaries, but they're still fat binaries because they have Intel code that we don't need anymore. So, this idea of thinning out fat binaries, I'm always hesitant to do that. I feel like, don't get me wrong, getting a gig of space back, awesome. Glad to hear it, Bob. But if a gig of space is what makes the difference, your drive is still too full. And so as I'm reading this, it's like, yeah, I could go through and thin those out. I trust that, you know, I'm never going to need to run this on an Intel Mac because I don't have any more Intel Macs, that at least not that function in my house. So all good. Like, that's going to be fine. But if that's really, this is, you know, deck chairs off the Titanic at that point. So I think there's more to be cleaned, and maybe, you know, Space Lens or Daisy Disk or Grand Perspective, you know, is necessary to find some other things. So, yeah.
I know we also called those fat binaries back in the day. It was still universal. That was Apple's marketing term, even for x86 to, or for PowerPC to x86. It was universal.
Oh, we just called them fat binaries. That was just us. Okay.
Well, I think that it might have even said that in the system. Like, if you looked at, like, the, you know, Git info or whatever. But the marketing term was universal. You know, Apple always has to have their marketing terms, right? And then the current implementation is called Universal 2, technically.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay.
But yeah. Same concept.
Yes, of course. Yeah. They're still fat binaries to me. I had an interesting experience that you inspired me to have, Adam. And that is, I went to see They Might Be Giants in Boston at the Orpheum. This is relevant. I don't know, a week and a half ago or something. And as I was leaving the house, I have my I'm going to a concert checklist, of course, on my in Apple Notes. And I bring special I bring different glasses for concerts. I actually bring glasses that have a little bit of they're almost sunglasses. They have a light blue tint, which is great because it helps mask the bright lights. I started wearing them on stage is really where that came from. But that's an aside. And on the list is like, you know, a sealed bottle of water that hopefully I can sneak into the venue and my earplugs. And so I grabbed my custom fit musician's earplugs that are perfectly tuned and make everything sound great. And then I also grabbed my AirPods Pro Gen 2 and I hooked them on. I have a little case from Catalyst that I hooked onto my belt loop and off to the show we went. And we got there and, you know, got our seats and everything was good. And I thought, oh, yeah, I'll try this. And so I put my AirPods in. I put them in noise-canceling mode, and I turned off conversation awareness because I kind of figured that would be a good thing. And the first thing was as soon as I put them in, having it remove the din of the crowd noise even before the show, just the noise-canceling part of it was utterly sublime. Being in there without being subject to that just, you know, auditory barrage was lovely. And then the band started and I was like, okay, now this, I've seen They Might Be Giants before. It's been a while. But, you know, I was like, okay, like they had the full band and they were rocking along. I was like, okay, this is really nice. The sound was good with my AirPods. Everything was great. I looked at my watch because on the face of my watch, I keep the sound, the SPL levels. I like to know how many dBs it is. That's just me. I'm a nerd. I like to know that all the time. So I look at my watch and I was wearing like a, it was cold in the venue. Our seats were kind of on an aisle that had like an Arctic breeze coming from the door. So I still had like a sweatshirt on or something. It hadn't quite warmed up because we were only a song or two in. They'd finally closed the doors now that everybody was in. And so it was kind of getting better. But, and the sound was clear. Like it was really good. And the Orpheum, the sound in there is, it's a difficult room. It's one of these old theaters, very charming, has this low-end rumble that just exists in the room. It happens with every band I've seen there. And you can, like, if you're a good engineer, and this person was, you know, you can get a good sound, but it's hard work. This room is not gonna just give it to you. And so I was like, oh, yeah, the sound is good. I look, and I'm like, oh, it's because he's got it so quiet in here. I'm like, there's something wrong. Because my watch said it was 75 dB. I'm like, there's no way. Like I'm 15 rows from the stage. There's no way. It's something must be wrong. Maybe my sweatshirt was covering my watch. I'm like, okay, well, whatever. So I looked at it like two songs later and it still says, you know, 75, 80 dB. I like even just me talking here right now in this room has me over 80 dB at my watch. So I was like, wait a minute. And I tapped the little thing to bring up the full, like whatever that app is called that shows you your sound levels. And it said 76 dB with AirPods. And I was like, oh, that's to me. And then I could tap the little with AirPods thing and see the ambient sound. And it was 102. And I was like, what? How loud is it in here? And I took out my AirPods and it was like, wow, it's loud in here. It was amazing. And then I did A-B back and forth, of course, because I'm a nerd. I can't help myself. So I put my my I'll call them passive earplugs in my, you know, musician's earplugs. And it was like, it brought the sound level down the 20 dB that they're supposed to, but it was not as clear and good because it, like, I was still getting that low end rumble of the room.
Yeah.
It, you know, it was like, okay. And it's interesting. My initial thought, so I put the Apple one, my AirPods Pro Gen 2 back in, and that's what I used for the rest of the show. My initial thought was I could use not a little more bass guitar. I could hear the bass, but all I was getting was sort of the high end sound of the bass. I wasn't getting the low end. I was getting low end from the kick drum, but I like feeling it in my body, but I wasn't getting that kind of low end push from the bass. And as I did all these back and forth experiments, I realized, wait a minute, I'm not getting that because the engineer is not putting that in the house. They have pulled that out of the house because if they put that in the house, it would add to the mud that that room already delivers. So I'm actually getting what the engineer's putting in the speakers without the resonance of the house. I would actually have preferred like to split the difference. I want a little more resonance than my AirPods Pro 2 were giving me and less than my passive earplugs or just, you know, having no earplugs in were giving me. My guess is that either Apple, right, will give us an option to sort of tune what we might want out of these things, or another company will come out with their version of active earplugs.
Concert mode.
Yeah, concert mode, right, whatever. One part was interesting. I turned around at one point. This is the thing I do at concerts. I like to just sort of slowly turn around and just look at all the people in the venue. It's something I've always done. And so I did that. And boy, did that screw up my AirPods. When I finally faced the band again, it was like, it took about 10 to 15 seconds for things to like, okay, I'm reoriented. I see where the sound is coming from. But that's the thing. They figured out this is the direction from which the primary sound source is coming from. And everything else is reflections. Get rid of them. It was really amazing. And
that is eye-watering when you think about the programming that's gone into that. Oh my goodness.
And here's the thing. That's my AirPods Pro Gen 2, I think I paid $149 for them on sale, but they're normally $169 or $179. My musician's earplugs, I paid $230 for those, plus a visit to the audiologist, which was another probably $50 or $75 to get molds made. Half the price, essentially, for AirPods Pro Gen 2 with the AirPods Pro Gen 2 are the first AirPods where Apple's tips actually fit and seal in my ears. Prior to that, nothing had worked. But you inspired. I don't know that I ever would have thought to try this, Adam, if you hadn't told me that you tried it.
So, oh, they're great. Yeah.
It's amazing.
But you do it in transparency mode, not active noise canceling mode.
I put them into noise canceling mode.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
But, and they're still okay.
But right. When I put them back in after I had taken them out, because I took them out actually both for just using my passive earplugs, but also just to listen to, you know, the listening to one song at 100 dB is okay. Like it's the time of exposure, duration of exposure, I should say. And when I put them back in, they went into noise, like what you and I would know as noise canceling mode immediately. And that was wrong. And it took, again, that 10 to 15 seconds for them to go, aha, I need to go into earplug mode. And then they did. And it was like, everything was back to where I wanted it to be.
Okay, nice. Because like when I was at that Jimmy's Jazz Club, we were getting about anywhere from 100 to 105 decibels. And I had the foam earplugs in. And I was like, I wish I'd have brought my AirPods Pro to try that. I bet it would have been a much nicer experience in that small room, especially.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Gen 2. Those are the only ones that have
the Gen 2. Yeah.
You got to have the Gen 2. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. I was just going to add, I finally enabled and did the audio test through Apple. Although, like we talked about in a previous episode, I could have pulled up the audiogram that I did, you know, with a third party app way back when. But I turned on the hearing aid finally because I was watching a movie for the new podcast, and it was through like Tubi or one of those services where you got to watch ads. It was the only place we could find the movie, but the sound was just terrible. Like it was just really low and I didn't want to be blasting my speakers. And I'm like, well, maybe part of it's me because I have a little bit mild hearing loss. So I set up the AirPods and they work great for that too. I actually have, and I hate them and I don't wear them, I have like hearing aids, like professional hearing aids. I went in and those things were not cheap. I think I want to say they were $3,000.
Yeah.
And the AirPods Pro, in my opinion, are way better. The issue I have with the hearing aids, and I went in and had them tuned and retuned, and I have an app. I can tune them myself on my phone. No matter what I could do, it was like having this fake superhuman. Like, I could just tell when I have them in that the sound is like, especially like very soft sounds are amplified. And it's like, I become hypersensitive to like little scratchy sounds, or if I touch, even if I touch my head, it's like super loud and uncomfortable, and I just don't enjoy the audio experience. The AirPods have a little bit of that, but it's way, way better. And to your earlier point, way cheaper.
Way cheaper. Yeah. I mean, the difference is that these, in the hearing aid mode, these are over-the-counter hearing aids for the AirPods Pro versus medical hearing aids. Doesn't mean that one is better than the other. It does mean that one has been, in theory, certified Correct. By an audiologist to be suited for you and your problem. And
Correct.
Right. So.
And the other has millions of dollars of R&D going into making them great.
It's true. Well, that's the thing. You know, the having been involved with like sound and especially ear monitors, the in-ear monitors for 2 decades now. This is actually my 20th year wearing in-ear monitors. I've learned that the audio industry is very small. Like the people that work in the hearing aid, hearing aids, in-ear monitors, the people designing like earbuds and all that stuff, it's the same, let's say 50 people, but it's probably less than that, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So it's very tight knit. And yes, there's money there, but it's not a ton of money, you know? And so when like you just said, Pete, you know, you take Apple's dollars and pour them at this because clearly they chose to invest in this. And Apple has probably spent double what the entire hearing aid industry has spent already, and they're probably not done.
I bet they brought some of those engineers in.
I'm sure they did.
Audiologists.
Yes, of course. Of course. Yeah, yeah. It's really fascinating. Yeah.
So two final things. So I will point out, you know, for me, I think part of it too is I have very, very mild hearing loss. It's very minimal. There's just certain higher tones that I can't hear. So that's why it makes it hard sometimes when, you know, voice on a movie or certain voice levels, like my family frustrated them. I have daughters and a wife, so it's all females and they're all in that more upper range. So there's certain things that I just can't hear. So it's very mild. So my experience might be very different if I actually had, you know, severe or moderately severe hearing loss. You know, I might have a very different opinion. I don't know how the AirPods perform in that situation versus the hearing aids. But secondarily, I kind of brought this up because the other thing was once I enabled the hearing aid mode, which is in the, you know, in the settings. So when we have the AirPods in, you got to go into the settings and there's a toggle for it once you've got it set up. I am throwing out there, I don't know that there's any way to put them back into the non-hearing aid mode other than going into the app, because the next time I wanted to use them just as AirPods, I was still getting all the hearing aid stuff and I actually had to go in and disable that before I could use, you know, regular active noise canceling and all those other settings. They were, you know, like permanently in hearing aid mode. So if anybody knows a quick way, like, I didn't see anything in the settings where I could do that, you know, squeeze the stem thing to toggle that, but maybe I just missed it. I don't know.
All right, folks. So this one's a little different because not only is Private Internet Access, or PIA VPN, a sponsor of this episode, they're also one of our CES 2025 coverage sponsors. And we're stoked to have them on board, supporting our travel and expenses for all the coverage we'll be bringing you early next month. Now, let me ask you this. When you're online, do you really know who's watching? If your answer is probably no one, think again. Using an unprotected internet connection is like wearing a neon sign that says, "Hack me, I dare you." But private internet access, PIA VPN, has your back. PIA VPN is your digital bodyguard, encrypting your data and letting you choose from servers in 91 countries and all 50 states. You want to stream region-locked content or snag cheaper flights by pretending you're in Antarctica? PIA makes it happen. Plus, I've been using PIA for so long, I actually paid for it before they became a sponsor. And PIA VPN is available for all platforms, Windows, macOS, Android, Linux, iOS, and many more. And you can use one subscription to protect an unlimited amount of devices at the same time. Oh, and, you know, I always like to put an Easter egg in. PIA's encryption is so advanced, I'm 90% sure it's powered by quantum hamsters running on encrypted wheels. You didn't hear it from me, though. Don't get caught with your data in the wild. Go to PIAVPN.com/MGG to get 83% off. That's just $2.03 a month, plus 4 free months. There's also a 30-day money-back guarantee, so it's completely risk-free. Again, that's PIAVPN.com/MGG to get 83% off, plus 4 free months. You're gonna love it. Thanks again to PIA for keeping us secure and supporting all the coverage we'll be bringing you from CES 2025. While we're in the process of thanking people, I want to thank those of you whose contributions have come through in the last, since the last time we did this, into our premium program at MacGeekGab.com/premium. As we always say, it is not mandatory. It is very certainly appreciated. And even more than that, it is part and parcel of what it takes to allow us to do this show the way that we do it. So you have our endearing and everlasting thanks. We got, and thanks to a $50 contribution from Chuck in Boulder. Thanks to Elliot in Lebanon for a $30 contribution. $25 contributions, thanks to Stacy in La Crosse, Andrew in Grosse Pointe Woods, David in Huron, and Richard in Melbourne. Thanks to Bob in Lepesh for your $15 contribution. And thanks to the following for $10 contributions: Timothy in West Windsor, Frank in Voorhees, Chris in Chorleywood, Brian in Southbury, Santiago in Palm City, Kevin in Edison, and Michael in Robbins. Thanks to all of you. You rock. Shall we do some questions, guys?
Yeah, absolutely, Dave. And,
is that a question? Or a suggestion?
Der Jazzmeister has one for you.
Okay.
Says, I have an M2 Mac Mini running Sonoma. I have not yet upgraded to the latest OS. I also regularly use a 2015 MacBook Pro, which cannot be upgraded to the latest OS. If it can't be updated to Sonoma. Okay. My question is this: if I upgrade my Mini to the new OS and start using the fancy password manager, will my updates and changes still sync with my MacBook Pro keychain and vice versa? Do I run the risk of forking my passwords if the OSs are out of sync? Thanks.
Forking his passwords. So, the short answer is you should be okay, because it's all designed to work around your iCloud keychain. So if you've got an old machine logged into your iCloud account and a new machine logged into your iCloud account, all your passwords should sync. You're probably not going to be able to use passkeys and some of the advanced password sharing and all that kind of stuff on the old machine, on the old system. It isn't designed to do that as yet. But as I understand it, and all the research I was able to do, and I want Dave and Adam both to jump in here and tell me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is the iCloud keychain is the backbone of that system, and you should be fine across all OSs. You're just not going to have all the features, but make sure you have a backup.
Yeah.
You know, which is good advice any day, but That's a very short way of saying, you know, I wrote him a rather long answer based on all the research I was doing, but I think that's the basics of it. You're going to be fine. It's not going to fork things off in different directions and have, you know, one password on one machine and a different password on another. If you change a password, it should translate across using the iCloud keychain system.
That was sort of my understanding of what Apple was doing, that the new app was basically just a new skin on top of the existing iCloud keychain sort of database or data, for lack of a better term to call it. You know, it's like an update to a big update to keychain access, really.
That's my understanding too.
Yeah.
Is that yes. And actually it's my experience because I run some of my iPads that I have in kind of my gig mode here, which I use for either mixing like the sound for my ears or elsewhere, or looking at like charts or notes that I've made or whatever. Those many of the, we never get rid of iPads here. We just use them until they no longer hold a charge. And, but some of them can't run iOS 18 at all. Like some of them can't run iOS 15, but the passwords that I sync to Apple Passwords still, I haven't had an issue with that. So let's put it that way. So yeah. I think you'll be all right. I think
should be fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I think so.
I mean, if anybody knows otherwise, again, let us know. Feedback at keycap.com.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, Pete, I've got a question for you from Abraham, who writes, I have an old iMac that I'm thinking about replacing with either a new iMac or a Mac Mini. The problem is that Apple has been so good about making these machines light and portable, but the actual moving them comes with some pain. I would love if they would come with even a small internal battery so that when I want to move them, I don't have to power off and power on. Is there some other solution for this, like maybe an external battery pack that the computer power cable could be plugged into, which would then be plugged into the outlet, so that when I want to move the computer, the power cable would still be plugged into the battery pack and could stay on? Or is there a different solution for this?
So, yes. Well, yes, there is. So what I found is basically a 450-volt amp battery pack available at Best Buy. We'll put the link in the show notes.
Okay.
That should get you up and running. The problem is you're going to have to power down to put it on this battery supply.
Sure.
I've never thought about moving the iMac or a Mac Mini that much. But like you said, they are kind of portable. So if you need to move them, buy a new laptop. All right.
Kidding. Yeah.
But yeah. So that's the smallest they have, is a 450-volt amp. And that ought to keep you running, you know, for, I don't know, better part of an hour, I'd think, if you're not doing heavy stuff on it. And then they have a 750-volt amp before you start getting into their really heavy hitters, 1500 multi-thousands. But yeah, that looks like it'll do the job.
Yeah. That would work. I have some other thoughts on this, Pete.
I wonder if any of those power bank bricks would.
They should.
But how are you going to?
Yeah, it depends.
But now
on
you got to find a way to plug it in
if they have AC power. Volts. Correct. You need AC power for this, not just USB-C power, right?
What is the use? Maybe I'm confused on the use case or the question here. Am I totally confused on the question here?
I don't.
My understanding is he wants to move iMac from one room to another without powering down.
He wants it to be portable. Powered while in
temporarily,
motion.
Right? Not like indefinitely.
Yes. Yeah.
But, go ahead, Adam.
Am I getting this wrong? Like, if you had a, I don't know what the power draw on the M4 Mac Mini is. It's like 65 watts or something like that.
Yep.
So if you had a battery, a USB-C battery pack that did, so let's call it 100 watts because those exist, I'm pretty sure. That can provide 100 watt draw, which is more than enough for the M4 Mac Mini. Mm-hmm. Isn't any USB-C port draw power, so couldn't you just have a battery pack plugged into a different USB-C?
Am I wrong on that? To get AC power.
Well, you're both saying two different things. So what Adam is suggesting is, can't you just plug in USB-C to USB-C on the power bank to USB-C on the Mac Mini and have that run? And I don't think that's the way it works. I could be wrong, but I don't think the Mac Mini will draw power over USB-C. What Pete's saying is, I think, correct, that the only place the Mac Mini will draw power is from its, AC power adapter and you know, wherever that is, 220 or 110 here in the U.S.
So it's not like a MacBook?
I don't think so, no. I haven't tried that, but I don't think so. But assuming if what you suggested is possible, that's the best answer. If it's not, there's two products that come to mind for me. One is what Blue Yeti, I believe, is the name of it. They call it their hands-free, and they have the hands-free one and the hands-free two. This is a set. It is a backpack with a monster battery that can fit inside it. It can also just be taken out. It is a portable backpack. It has AC outlets on it, and also USB outlets and all those things. And you can even
solar panels.
Put solar. You can get solar panels for it. The solar panels are optional, but it comes with this monster battery that you can plug something into. And so that would absolutely solve this issue for them. So that would be one solution, is the Blue Yeti hands-free. And again, you could get it with solar if you really want. And it comes in this backpack form. But I have one. The battery, it comes out of it and is like, it's like a maybe it's like four laptops. That's the size of four laptops stacked on top of each other. It's big, but form factor wise, it fits in this backpack and you can actually carry it around. Like it's fine. And it has a handle on the top of it, so you can just carry it by itself. The other thing would be from our friends at Anchor. They have the Solix brand, S-O-L-I-X. Now the Solix brand runs the full gamut, all the way up to things like what you have, Adam. I know you don't have the Anchor brand of it, but the house generator replacement kind of things with a battery.
Yep.
And they'll do solar and all that. That's why they call it Solix. But they have the Solix C300. So the Blue Yeti backpack is $399 on Amazon. The Anchor Solix C300 right now is $249. It's a smaller battery, slightly different form factor. It's more cube-like. It's like a tall cube, which I realize isn't a cube. But it has a handle, and you can get it in DC mode where it has just tons of USB-C and all that stuff on it, or the standard one, which has three AC outlets on it. And also three USB-C and I think one USB-A and whatever we call the cigarette lighter adapter. I forget what that is. But this, too, would do the same thing, and you can carry it around, and it's got a handle on it. So I have been using I have something like this. It's an old version. But in my office, where I don't have the full-time generator, I have, it's going to sound crazy, I have my UPS plugged into one of these, so that this will power the UPS. It's two layers of battery protection, right? This will power the UPS until the UPS dies, or until it dies. And then and only then will the UPS go into kind of its power saving, shut down the computer's mode, and all of those things. So it should, in theory, buy me quite a bit. And then, of course, this thing's plugged into the AC outlet, so. Those are my thoughts on this.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you've daisy chained your batteries a little bit.
I've daisy chained my batteries. Yeah. And the reason is that my UPS links with like all of my router gear and my the devices that are plugged in via USB to tell them that they should shut down before the power just goes away. And so I like that functionality. But yeah, it's an extra battery. So I've just daisy chained them and I've tested it as much as I can. Like, you know, pull the power from here, pull the power from there. Does everything still function? Yes. Okay, great. My biggest issue was none of the things I have that I've tried will happily deal with my laser printer in the office. Because it draws too much power for any of them.
Mm.
So that just has to be plugged in separately. But that's okay. It's fine. It's
So, Dave, I was doing a little research while you were doing all that, and I think you guys are right. You do need a power inverter. But it looks like the guys over at folks, I guess I should say, over at Mac Insider created this exact setup with a M4 Mac Mini, and they found a battery pack that has an inverter, an AC outlet on it that's about just a little bit bigger footprint than the actual Mac Mini.
Even better. Let's see.
It's not a huge battery, and that their only complaint is you could probably find a better battery, one that would it sounds like maybe provide more power. Again, this only provides enough for the non-Pro Mac Mini.
Okay.
I think it sounds like the one with the Pro processor needs 140 watts or something.
Huh.
You can read the article, but yeah, depending on your mileage may vary, but like, this is one solution. They were saying they're using it as a portable Mac Mini setup with an Apple Vision Pro for like podcasting and stuff like that. So they have the Mac Mini and then use the Apple Vision Pro as their display.
Oh, wow. That's really smart.
That they can take in a backpack and...
Yup.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
So.
I like it. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll put links to that in the show notes too, because that's only $60 on Amazon. So it only has 20,000 milliamp hours. So I don't know how long that's gonna run for. But for Abraham's question, moving, you know, from room to room kind of thing, and then plugging back in might do it for you. Yeah. That's really interesting.
Yeah. They said about 2 hours.
Oh. Okay.
Oh. All wow. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
Because the mini draws 12 to 15 watts.
Yeah.
On average for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. For their use. Again, depending on what you're doing on it and all that, you know, your mileage is going to vary.
That's fair. Yeah, yeah. Fun stuff. Yeah, there's a lot going on in like the battery realm right now. I just have to assume that it's related to kind of, I bet we could draw a line back to electric cars, right? Like all the learnings and things that we've figured out about batteries. And I say we very, very... generally, like not us, but we humanity, you know, these things spill over. It's like, well, wait, we can, now that we've figured out how to make a battery efficient at that size, what if we shrink it down and, you know, you carry it with you? Okay. Well, this could power my house. Oh, huh, this is interesting now. Okay. Yeah. Well, now there's an opportunity here. So yeah, I like it. Are we calling it for the year, guys? Shall we?
I think so.
You want to take us to... No? All right.
Yeah.
I mean, take us to what? We can do one more real quick.
Yeah. What do you want to do, Pete?
Pete's Eager Beaver.
All right. Let's go to Jed. Jed? Okay.
He said, hey, gents. Sorry it's close to gentlemen, but, you know, close enough. It's the end of the year. You know, happy new year. He says, I decided to splurge for a magic trackpad, but it's not working as it should. Wired or wireless. When I hook it up, it behaves as a mouse. And in the system settings running 14.7.2 on a Mac Studio, it shows mouse and keyboard, but no trackpad options. By the way, on another computer, it worked fine, which suggests it's not the hardware. I can upgrade to the newest flavor of macOS 15, but I shouldn't have to, should I?
No. And I think he said he cannot upgrade, but either way, the question is valid. I shouldn't have to.
Yeah, I can't upgrade. Yeah, I can't upgrade to the newest. Yeah.
So this is one of those sort of stump the geek things. Whenever I encounter this from one of you or in real life, although this is also real life, in person, I should say, I go into, okay, well, what would I do next if I were there mode? So I would look in system information. in Bluetooth and or USB, depending on how you've got this thing connected. And I would try connecting it both ways, right? Because when a trackpad is connected USB, it also registers, you know, with via the Lightning port and all that. Mm-hmm. So I would look in there and see how the system identifies the device. It should give you some detail about it. Hopefully that kind of frames things and tells you what's going on. And I would do the same on another machine and make sure it's telling you the same thing. If it's not, then that tells me that the drivers in the system for this have gotten foobarred. So if you so there's a couple ways to solve that. The first way I would solve it is I would go all the way back to Mac Geek Gab 1069 last week, and I would boot that Mac in safe mode and see if that just magically solves this issue. And then also after safe mode, reboot in regular mode, see if it remains solved. If it doesn't in one or both of those cases, then the next thing I would do is reinstall the version of the OS that you have on there, whatever that is. And hopefully that will replace whatever damaged driver-ish thing that's broken. That's what I got.
Yep. That's what I was going to say. Like, just try an over-the-top install of the operating system. Like, don't even do anything weird. But your advice of trying safe mode first just to validate before you go down that path is good.
Yeah.
Good advice. Yeah, that sounds right. But I mean, he asks, well, what about just upgrading to 15? That problem might fix it too. I mean, that yes, could be the same solution. So if there's not a specific reason you're waiting to upgrade to 15, I would just say upgrade to 15.
My guess is if he said he can't upgrade, it's probably I'm using some.
Oh, he said he can't. Sorry, I just did the same thing Pete did.
Yeah, but right. But like I know the Mac Studio can run Mac OS 15. I have one in front of me. It's right. Also not running Mac OS 15 yet, right? Like, because I have reasons that I don't yet want to upgrade.
So just over the top install 14.7.2.
Yeah. See what happens.
Test it first. Yeah.
Good right. Advice. Yeah. Safe mode might fix it. I would be that's a curiosity for me just because we talked about it in the last episode. Like, will this do it? So,
why? Yeah. Why does that work?
No, it should. It does a safe mode does a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, folks. Well, that is going to do it for us for the full year of 2024. Yeah.
Done for the year.
That's it. We're not doing any more shows this year, but we'll do some next year.
I hear the band.
Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us today, all year. Thanks to everybody that today was in the chat room that it has ever been in the chat room. We love having this real-time feedback. It helps guide the show, which is good for all of you. And it makes it kind of fun and all. There's all, so many things. So thanks to those of you in the chat room. Thanks to those of you who listen. And I'm using air quotes here, all you do is listen to this show. Even if you never send in feedback, you never join the chat room, you never do anything else, that's great. We love you. So we'd like to hear from you. Don't get me wrong. But we love you just the same. If you do want to do something, though, MacGeekGab.com/reviews. That's where you can review the show on one of the many platforms. And that also helps
us. Five stars. Count them.
We love them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Thank you so much for hanging out. Thanks to CashFly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Thanks to our CES coverage sponsors, Bombic Software, Omni Group, Private Internet Access, Roborock, Eero. And, thanks to all of you. Thanks, Pete. Thanks, Adam. Love doing this.
Thank you. So do I. This is fun.
It is.
Can't believe you guys keep having me back.
I can't believe you keep having me back.
Well, there's that.
Adam, do you have any advice to share with our friends?
Yeah. Just keep doing what you did this year in the new year and don't get caught.
Made up.